Hi everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. I'm Diana Maria Georgescu, and I will be your host today for a new insightful conversation where we explore the heart of business transformation, leadership, and the human experience behind success. Today's episode is all about rethinking leadership in a world that demands more than just strategy and numbers. We're diving deep into the power of emotional intelligence, the importance of meaningful workplace culture, and how creativity can drive purpose and real change. The main goal of the entire discussion is to take valuable lessons from an international expert on this area, working with different business sectors, and adapt them to the Romanian business context. Our special guest today is Belen De Vicente Retortillo Fisher, a leadership, business development, and communication expert with over 15 years of experience across sectors like NGOs, multinationals, education, and startups. Belen specializes in emotional and multiple intelligences, people experience, and creative transformation, helping leaders and teams grow with purpose and authenticity. I'm truly honored to introduce a remarkable woman I had the privilege of working with for near 4 years now, someone whose talent, dedication, and unwavering commitment I deeply admire. Her experience speaks for itself, and I'm confident it will bring incredible value to our business mentoring program. But rather than tell you more, I let her speak for herself. Welcome, Belen, to our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Diana. Well, it's always a pleasure. So thank you so much for having me here today.
Thank you for accepting our invitation. Belen, from your experience of coaching and mentoring professionals, what does it truly mean to lead with emotional intelligence in today's business world? And why does it matter more than ever?
It matters more than ever because I believe that in the last century or so, more or less probably since the Industrialized Revolution and forward, we have been leading through a lot of structure and a lot of strategy. This is not to say that that is wrong and what we're doing is wrong, but we are now in a new era where there is more, we're more aware of what our emotional capacity links to our physical and our mental abilities. Therefore, continuing in the same line of hierarchy and structural demands does not align with the needs of the people. The people, what they wish to is belong. They wish to have an identity. They wish to be part of something bigger. When you manage to align people's values and needs to your company's needs is when the flower flourishes, where everything comes together, and when results, rather than just happen, thrive. And that is why emotional intelligence must be present in the workforce, because it enables us to not only grow professionally, but grow as human beings, grow as a team, grow as a society. And it also enables us to move forward, not necessarily at a faster pace, although in many occasions it does entice that result, but rather with quality rather than quantity. And that's what we're striving for. A lot of times people believe that emotional intelligence is a weakness. It kind of entices vulnerability. And what they don't realize is that vulnerability is not a weakness, but rather is a, like I call it, a superpower that enables us to connect much more and to understand each other. We are human beings. We're not robots. And it might have worked, you know, in the 19th, 20th centuries, but it just is not giving the results we're looking for anymore, especially with the amount of competence, yeah, of competition there is out there.
That's right. And I like the fact that you underline the competition that it's in the business sector. And this competition maybe makes us being less human oriented.
Yeah.
And I would like to bring on the table the fact that Romania has a growing trend now of big companies offering a more friendly and human-oriented workplaces. In your experience, Belen, on this field, how can leaders go beyond perks and policies to create workplace cultures that people genuinely connect with?
So, in my experience, there is a growing trend to make workplaces more comfortable. You know, some places have a little space where people can chill, or they do bring in dynamics that people can do. But for me, the most important thing is for the leaders to actually decide to experience the day-to-day, the emotions, the situations, the milestones together, because there is still very much ingrained in our businesses, in our society, the no, I'm the leader. So I might sometimes be like with you, like haha, and having a great time, but I'm the leader and I have to take the decisions and I'm up here, rather than stepping back and actively listening to the people they work for, not even their employees, which they are, but let's say the team, you know, to actively listen to them, to open up to their situation, to empathize, to build a resilient team as a whole, not a I am here and you step behind me because I'm the one that has to take the decisions, but rather openly listen and create transparency. I think we have, you know, come closer to that kind of environment, but there's still a big stretch between where we are and where we want to be. It's very unconscious. I mean, in our, you know, neurologically speaking, we are 95% unconsciousness, even though we really believe that all our decisions are really well thought through. It's demonstrated scientifically through a lot of research, and that leaves 5% conscious. So my intake in this is the more aware you are about this great tendency we have, the more you help yourself be able to put yourself into a situation where you actively listen. You know, if there are complaints or if there are tense situations, through taking time to actually bring yourself down to their level, rather not just listen, but observe what's going on, it'll not only enable you to be able to connect with them, but for them to connect with you. And there'll be a level of transparency. And what happens is that I see that a lot of leaders try to do this, but they're still very much the hierarchical situation that no. Like, yes, like, and that really disrupts the workforce, because and the atmosphere, because people, you know, they become very kind of discontent, but moreover confused, because they're like, okay, very good that you pat me on the back and we're friends, but then you do this to me, or you have an extreme reaction. Well, I had a situation that happened to me, and many times, and they were reevaluating, you know, the team, and they were reevaluating the members in the team. And logically, yeah, and statistically, it made sense to reduce the team. But then when they looked into the emotional ties of the team and how that kind of built, you know, and motivated and promoted, they said, oh, wait a minute, I'm seeing the emotional ties here. So that, you know, that is more important than the statistical results I'm getting ASAP. So they decided to withhold and to see, you know, and give, let's say, more power or more listening and promoting. And it went amazing. The company's results happened within the quarter of, you know, within the quarter of the term. And it was amazing. It was amazing to see, because also, you know, we forget that human factor, you know, the motivation, the self-esteem, all those factors are extremely important. And in many occasions, obviously at start, they're qualitative and not quantitative. So a lot of leaders, or a lot of, you know, consultants. They're like, oh, I don't know if this is gonna work, you know? But if we focus and we structure through like emotional, through even physical, professional, personal, things come together.
That's right. And you spoke about leaders and re leadership now. But I have a question here because I know that you have also a cultural background, right? You belong to two cultures somehow. So the question that comes to my mind right now is regarding the leadership part. Is it something those examples that you gave us are coming from the Spanish culture, from the British culture, or doesn't matter the culture, pretty much the behavior you notice it's the same.
It does. The culture does matter very much so. Also depends on the company because, for example, multinational companies obviously have a higher threshold of cultures. So that's also extremely important because when you come from an experience of a multicultural background, for example, me, you have a greater tendency to look for that. Yeah, it's part of your DNA as such. But when you don't, even though I must say that due to globalization and so forth, you know, multiculturalism is more and more common. But when you don't belong, it is true that it creates certain strains because it creates maybe misunderstandings or mishaps, not only on a leader level, obviously, but on a team level, on a production, on a results level, communication level, absolutely, you know. Not only verbal, but also body communication. There's so many differences. Well, there's an expert in emotional intelligence who was called Paul Ekman. Probably most of you know him because he was the famous person that taught the FBI to become a human lie detector through macro and micro gestures. Although that's debatable, the human lie detector is not per se. Well, I studied under him and it was extremely interesting because based on your culture, you have something called like the baseline, which is certain movements in your expression that for you it's natural and it's your base, but for someone else in another culture, it isn't. So maybe the subtle reaction, unconscious reaction to your baseline is different for someone else. You know, maybe for them you're scowling and that means you're, you know, not open and not receptive. But in your case, it's your baseline. So that is super important to acknowledge from the very beginning. Again, I think avoiding putting labels on people due to these baselines and their culture is essential. Because it might be someone that is going to do amazingly well in a team. It might be someone more introvert at first, but then extrovert with people they know, but then their amount of knowledge or their amount of skills or their amount of input into the team or the company is extraordinary. I think many times we forget to kind of give that possibility to people to exceed, not to reach their potential. It's something we see over and over again in education that, you know, that experience you had with this one amazing teacher in your life that might, or mentor that might have changed your life and might have, you know, kind of reset your path, which has happened to loads and loads of people. That's why it's so important. The same thing happens in your professional and personal life, you know, with a partner or with a teammate or with a leader. And that is why being aware of the fact that this is a reality. It's not a possibility. It's a reality that we impact directly into other people's lives, not just professional careers, lives. And that is why at a cultural level, it's also very important to understand what are their needs? What are your colleagues or your employees' needs? Where are they coming from? Maybe for them, I don't know, to celebrate Chinese New Year, to have that one day, or Thanksgiving, or Reyes in Spain, or one day that maybe for you is not important, for them it's very important. And that is why active listening is so essential. And kind of get down from your high horse situation of, Because I've heard it over and over again, when especially with startups or smaller businesses, or even multinationals when they've grown, yeah. But the I give so much of my time and effort because this is my business or this is that, and this employee is not, clearly they're not gonna put in the same effort. And I agree and I disagree at the same time. On one hand, you can't expect your employee to be as involved with your idea and your company as you are. I think that would be strange at first, but it's in you to motivate them and help them see your vision and make them part of that vision and make them feel as such. That's why there's so much investment put in from big companies so people feel part of that nucleus, because that's what makes the difference, not only on a professional level, but on a personal level. When people feel valued, which is the key word here, regardless of their nationality, it just makes such a difference. And it's just, I feel it's also part of respect, and respect gives forward, gives opens up to val feeling valued. The fact that not to be labeled, or avoiding labeling, and opening to open-mindedness, and understanding. Yeah, maybe you don't share. I've had so many debates with different profiles of people from different religions, different perspectives. It's being open. It's like, okay, I let's agree to disagree, or that's an interesting point. I'm gonna take it on board. And creating this kind of environment on a business level, I believe it's extraordinary because it doesn't only enable people to coexist, but it also adds an extra or extra perspectives, not one, but rather more, about the same thing, about different new solutions, new paths, new perspectives, new projects, and enabling a space for that is absolutely essential, in my opinion. And it's a growing globalized world, and it's the future. It's the future for good or for worse. It's the future. So, yeah.
That's right, and I'm glad that you mixed here. We started with leadership, and we went to communication part, because during your professional journey, you assumed different roles as leadership, business development, and communication expert. But now I would like to ask you, what role does creativity play in aligning teams with purpose and driving meaningful transformation? Because it would be good for our listeners if you could give us an example of a success story where you use creativity to generate business transformation.
So I've had a lot of situations where, because leaders and organizations are hearing more about, different types of techniques or workshops, or even coaching, or situations where, they might do things a little bit different and a little bit more out of the box kind of situation. Yeah. So it's getting there. But whenever I mention creativity, unless it's maybe a studio that I've, a design studio or landscaping studio or something to do. So whenever I mention the word creativity, people are like, what? What does that have to do with business transformation, right? And I always explain to them that we creativity is what enables us to connect from the unconscious, which I mentioned before, being the 95% of our decisions, thoughts, actions, to our consciousness, which is only 5% of our huge potential individually, and let's not even talk about group. So creativity is what enables us to kind of flow between these two worlds. And when we open up to that creativity, when we add it, let's say, to our work tools and our life tools, because it's not only work, again, I insist on the whole people experience factor. Yeah, that's also another factor that people sometimes have a little trouble with, because they're like, but I'm in my workforce. And I'm like, no. You don't suddenly cut yourself up into many little pieces, and then you're like one, I don't know, one Belen at work and one Belen at your house and one Belen in your inner self. No, you're one whole being. You don't suddenly cut your lungs off from your heart. You would die. Yeah. So My point is, through creativity, you enable certain processes. For example, milestones. You know, one of the milestones of many businesses is to kind of jump over those obstacles, or assume those obstacles, assume those problems, and find solutions, or efficiency, or communication, or leadership. One example I can tell you is through an organizational storytelling lab that we created in a multinational that had, they wanted to do a restructure. They wanted to kind of align to new values. It was a, they had a merger. They merged with another company. And it was slightly changing, and they were having certain obstacles to adapt to the new requisites as such. So the senior leader wanted to restructure. And he said, okay, but you know, I'm seeing these kind of patterns happening, and it seems like the most logical thing here is to divide, restructure, and stuff. And I said, okay, well, let's do an organizational storytelling lab. And he said, what's that? He started kind of laughing. And I said, well, it's a place where people and teams can come together, and through metaphors and through visual narratives and through like creative artifacts can generate this kind of environment where it enables to first of all align their values and then speak in a natural way again, because it connects the conscious to unconscious, because it creates an environment of safety. And well, laughing helps a lot, to be honest. Laughing, kind of getting yourself out of the whole turmoil of work, it enabled them to speak more freely. Again, it's really important that the leader feels open to this, which is one of the main, in my opinion, milestones, because it all emanates from there. So through that, what happened was that the senior leader came to me and he said, "Oh my God, this is, has been the most like productive and best decision I took this year, because I realized that the problem was that people didn't under like they didn't have a clear job description and alignment." So they kept on kind of bumping, and they weren't clear of those objectives. So even though I may have asked for a certain objective or a certain result, they were completely, you know, unaligned in a way. And it wasn't obviously their fault. So by realigning this and sharing a purpose through this kind of visual narrative where people didn't feel, you know, in a situation where they felt uncomfortable, but rather it was through that narrative they were able to connect and they were able to express. And it sounds, you know, it sounds very typical. Oh no, communication, expression, and even though in many places that does occur, there are weekly or monthly or semester meetings. But again, we come to the active listening. The active listening and the willingness to open up to your own mistakes and to clearly understand the person as a whole, not as a, not just as a professional, you know, on this line of you're acting unprofessionally, you're acting, you know, and obviously there's limits to everything. There's limits to cohabiting, coexisting. But, and it's important to know those limits for yourself and to express them. But the lack of initiative, the lack of l active listening, and the lack of transparency and fear. Fear is one of the most promoting forces of unalignment, confusing, confusement, or feeling confused. There are. So when you allow for this kind of organizational storytelling lab, it enables people to kind of get out of their shells and connect, and the results are amazing. The team members became really emotionally invested in this new project, and it just unlocked a whole new transformation. It was amazing to see. So yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for this example, Belen, because indeed, being part of different multinational companies in the
Mm-hmm.
past, and right now running an NGO that is working with different people from different cultures. Sometimes I agree with you that it's not easy to connect, especially when we work remote. You know, this is a new era, post-pandemic era, and we work remote now, and we can lose touch with each other and so on and so forth. And this kind of activities, creative activities, can bring out the best in each team member. So thank you for sharing this example with us. Going forward, having supported businesses across different sectors like NGOs, multinationals, education, startups, and so on, can you share a moment when emotional intelligence or creative thinking made a real difference in a leadership decision this time?
Yeah, I've given a few examples actually coming up to this question. I've given a few examples already. But I think one situation that occurred this time was in an educational institute. It was like educational and NGO based. But again, it was the same, different workers. And the emotional dynamics were completely off. I think also it's very important to understand the type of work you're in. Regardless, always the emotional dynamics are important within your team, okay? But it's also important regarding the final client, right? The end person. And it's such a pity because in a lot of these jobs that involve a lot of human emotional kind of work together, there's a lot of instability. As the author, I love this author, Antonio Damasio. He's a university professor, and he always talks about homeostasis. So homeostasis means finding the balance. Either finding the chemical balance or finding the emotional balance. And in this case, in this kind of workforce, it's so important to have any, but especially the ones that you're emotionally invested with the final client, with the client. It's really important for there to be a homeostasis, a balance inside. So the leader, the CEO of this institute, was super emotionally invested, but with the clients, not with the employees. With the employees, she kind of expected them to act with vocation, to act as she would, as she did. But what she didn't realize is that the objective she was asking them didn't offer them value. The employees did not feel valued. They felt like they were always demanded time, their health, their efforts, and their ideas, because they were invested, the employees. That wasn't exactly the problem. The problem was that she didn't value them. So at the end of the day, especially in a work that demands a lot of emotional and not just physical and mental, but emotional giving, to your clients, it drains. It's very draining. That's something else that's really important to always remember, that we're not robots. We have ups and downs, and that is to be understood and to be respected, because when we're up, we give our 200%, but maybe when we're down here at a 50%, it's okay. Like we're over demanding, again, in a very competitive society that doesn't enable us to breathe. And that fact is completely kind of separating us from who we really are. But again and again, when we connect with who we really are, with our ups and our downs, with our understanding of our bodies, then the results are amazing, because we're able to kind of regulate the amount we can give. One day we might be more observing. One day we might be much more active. And even if we understand these patterns, because there are usually patterns of our energy, we are able to communicate with our team members. So I spoke with this leader, and we did this kind of creative future mapping session that she was able to re-envision, what was happening, her frustrations. Obviously, at a personal level, it also came up because she was so frustrated to the point that she was considering to close down the institute. And after we came out of this session with obviously like reflective pointers and over a process, it wasn't just one session, it was over some months. She came back to me and she said to me, "Stopping to reflect was one of the best things I've ever done because it enabled me to actually place myself as an observer, like as a third party." I also used some other techniques, mainly well, some from psychology, but mainly also from neuro-linguistic programming and NLP, that enables you to kind of place yourself in a third party position and see as an observer and become more neutral and not involve your emotions, because again, emotions come from our organs, from our physical organs that send a message through our nervous system to our brain. And that kind of destabilizes our chemical and bioelectric through our neurons. And it's no kidding. It's a real situation. And that's the problem. When you're a leader, you have so much responsibility. And I think it's implicit in society. It's like, oh, I'm the responsible one. Oh, I need to take decisions. This is what I was saying before. Oh, my workers don't do as much as I am. They're so ungrateful. Instead of being like, because we're like feeding, let's say it's an Indian story, and we're feeding the bad wolf. We have the good wolf and the bad wolf. And we're feeding that wolf, like, oh, and this is so bad, and they do this so bad. But when we change our let's say neurological pathway, yeah, per se, and we start feeding the good wolf and start showing appreciation, showing observance, reflecting, and the activity, the exercise of the future mapping is to be able to re-envision a different situation. And it's so powerful. It's so powerful, and it was amazing to see her. And since then, the institute has already grown, and it's given, I believe, over double the profits that it was giving, because not because the workers weren't involved initially, but because the leader was able to appreciate not only the clients, which he really did and did very well, but also the people she was working with, and actually get herself down there and not feel she was like the one with all the pressure and I must charge as in a battle, but rather like, hey, I've got people with me. And also something else, because she took it really bad when maybe, yeah, not everybody's going to be aligned with your values. Not everybody's going to have that set of values, and that's okay. And that's what it's about. It's about meeting people and seeing if you can kind of offer and get them into the loophole of, hey, I'm really motivated with this purpose. I want to form part of this too. But yeah, there's evolution. It's normal that people come and go. That's something else. And in companies, it's true that the retaining percentage goes up when the emotional dynamics create stability and create compromise. But it's also understanding that nowadays it's not like 20 years ago, or even, well, depending on the country. I don't know if in Romania you've noticed this, but 20, 30 years ago, and even like older generations stayed in the same work, in the same job all their lives. Yeah. And they had no need to look for other situations. But nowadays it's not the case, again, because of our globalized community, because of the opportunities, because nowadays everybody wants to travel, everybody wants to learn, everybody has, I don't know, a Thai restaurant next to them, or I don't know, a Spanish restaurant next to them, and they taste that culture. Oh, I want to go, I want to see, I want to learn. So yeah, and obviously transport has done a lot, transport, internet. So it's also understanding the era we're in, that people have those needs. And if you're able to cover those needs and understand them, then whilst you manage to retain that employee or that person, the idea is they will only contribute to your purpose, to your business, to your idea, but you will contribute to them. And that's what really changes the dynamics.
You gave us a really beautiful example. And now I would like, just for the people that are listening to us, I would like to underline what's that one mindset shift every leader should adopt today to build more human, purpose-driven organizations.
For me, the key aspect is let go of your control and begin to connect. So once you've done this, it might be a personal process for you, or a personal and professional process, of course. But many leaders are like, oh my God, what is this? See it as an opportunity, because it will touch upon every part of your life, not only your professional life. Once you do this, once you're open, as we said, the Indian tale, the wolves, you start feeding the good wolf. You start seeing opportunities where before you saw deflections or you saw downfalls. You start thriving, you start connecting, you start communicating. When a problem arises, you're much faster at seeing solutions, but not just you, but also lean on the others around you. I think also it gives a new meaning to your path. And through this vision, you're able to decipher and see potential where before you might not have seen in yourself and in others. And I think letting go of rigid hierarchies, letting go of power struggles and the need of constant structures, because I've sometimes met leaders that were incredibly creative, incredibly creative. It was astounding, but they were so rigid unconsciously. It was incredible. I was like, you lead an amazing, creative design team, let's say, but unconsciously, you're so scared and you're so rigid, and you're like, we must follow this, but then you don't, and you don't lead by example. It happens over and over and over again. Leading by example is so, so essential. If we don't lead by example, then what are, it's like a little child. I've seen this again and again as well. Like parents, I've seen them Friday afternoon. You go out to have, in Spain, we like to go out a lot and to enjoy and to spend time together and to have our aperitivos, appetizers, and so forth. And, I've seen these families going out on a Friday afternoon after school, and the kids are just looking into the nowhere, and the parents are stuck with their phones. And I'm like, but of course, I'm sure that then the kid would be like, no, you can't have a phone. Or no. And then it's like, where's the coherence? And the same thing happens in the workforce, in the businesses, that leaders expect their teams, their employees, to give results, to act a certain way, to immediately respond to their needs. But then it's not coherent. And the funniest thing is that they don't realize. So if you're open to this kind of thing, if you're open to letting control and start to connect on a personal and exterior way, it will certainly unlock the strength of your teams. It'll connect in a much more profound way, and it'll enable you. It'll enable you to be much more present. It'll enable you to show much more empathy, and overall to show resilience, which is I would say fundamental. All the businesses that have evolved over time, I mean, I remember before with cameras, there was Kodak, if you remember, and HP was also around. And why we, when you wanted to kind of see your photographs, you had to go to a shop and they had to give you the little cylindrical film, and of course that's gone. They're still like vintage kind of places, but that's gone. And Kodak completely went under the bridge. But HP, for example, was able to evolve and to look for other situations. It's such that, or for example, I have another case of plastic bags. A business that made plastic bags because before plastic bags were used so much. And when the new laws came out, because obviously legislation evolves too, some of them exceeded and started doing other options. But this company in particular, again, went under the bridge because they weren't able to be creative, to connect, to evolve, to see the other options. That's why it's so important.
Thank you so much, Belen, for sharing your wisdom and your experience today with us. And thank you for this gift, having the opportunity of seeing your role as a coach, as a mentor, but also as a very good teacher. So you actually demonstrate all of them today. So
Thank
thank you for this.
you very much.
Thank you. And this brings us to the end of this powerful conversation on rethinking leadership, emotional intelligence, workplace culture, and the creative mindset that drives true transformation. If there's one thing we hope you take away from today, it's this: leadership, it's no longer about control, as Belen said before, it's about connection. And the most successful business of tomorrow will be led by those who dare to lead with empathy, purpose, and vision, as Belen said. So, if you're ready to lead your business differently or face challenges with more clarity while having a strong team next to you, take these insights and turn them into actions on your own path. Don't miss the chance to explore the mentoring opportunities available in our community by accessing the links below. They could make all the difference. And if you found value in today's episode, don't forget to share it with your colleague or a friend who needs to hear it too. And make sure you subscribe to our channel by clicking the subscribe button below. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, keep living with purpose and building with heart.